Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a busy docket, and guess what? I am on the road again. I'll tell you a little bit more about that after the introduction. First, new information regarding the Alec Baldwin homicide. The Murdoch family is turning against Alec Murdoch, and I got a little bit of juicy information about that. More bizarre information regarding Lori Vallow. Several examples of why the world is simply losing their mind. First, a firebug in New York, a perv on a plane, and a perv on Halloween. The Kyle Rittenhouse case begins today, and let's not forget the dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel, the channel where a practicing criminal defense attorney explains the facts, the procedures, and the law to cold cases and current actual criminal cases. Welcome. Now, if you haven't done so already, please hit the subscribe button, hit the bell, hit that thumbs up so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And as always, leave us a comment below. Don't forget to listen to this show and past shows by downloading Crime Talk on all of your favorite podcasting apps like Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Android, Amazon Music, and Audible. All right, quickly, let's support the people that support Crime Talk. Please go to crimetalkprep.com. Now, several weeks ago, we started with Crime Talk Prep, and a lot of people chuckled and said, oh my gosh, Scott, you're some sort of prepper. You doomsdayer? No, not at all. I am a realist. There are supply shortages out there, supply chain shortages. We've all seen it. We all know what's happening. You need to make sure you have an emergency food kit. Go to crimetalkprep.com and you can get 3 months of their best-selling emergency food kit and $100 off. You'll be happy you did. It is the responsible thing to do. You never know what's going to happen in today's world. I think we have all seen that, well, from the last 2 years, can we not? All right. Go to crimetalkprep.com. All right, we have a big show today, but let me tell you first a little bit about what's going on here today. I am traveling, all right? Had a big trip planned coming down here to Florida to support the lovely Miss Kristen. First, I was gonna head down to Dallas. Didn't quite work out because my daughter's plans changed. So I went straight to Mississippi to check on a property that I have with my son. Then I jumped over to South Carolina, had to land in Savannah. Why? Shortages. That's right. No rental car, so I had to fly into Savannah International, take care of what I need to do. And then today, I flew down here to Tampa Bay, flew into Tampa Bay International Airport. Lovely airport. And all the people were so lovely. I'm telling you, there is something about the South. The hospitality is the best. I love it. I love it. I love it. But what did I get to do? That's right. I got to go to my local areas that I hang out when I come here. And boy, I got some of the skinny on Alex Murdoch. We'll talk about that. All right. So let's get to the show. Today is Monday, November 1st. Let's talk about Alec Baldwin. That's right. Some more information regarding the situation that regarding the death of Helena Hutchinson's. Apparently, she uttered something in response to a boom operator after being struck by the bullet that Alec Baldwin had just fired. She said, that's not good. That was not good at all. Hutchins had a dark sense of humor, apparently, and she showed it right before her tragic death. She was reportedly replying to the boom operator who said the exact same thing after seeing her injury as someone else shouted for a medic to rush and get her aid. Now, Souza, who is also injured, said something along the lines of, what the F was that? That burns. Alex similarly repeated and said, what the F just happened? The gun, which assistant director David Halls had declared was cold before the handing it to Alec, was supposed to be loaded with nothing but dummy rounds, but at least one real bullet was inside. Santa Fe authorities are still investigating the fatal shooting, but they have not ruled out criminal charges against anyone. Now, production's obviously shut down, and according to Baldwin, this movie may never get finished. Baldwin has since gone to a quiet Vermont town with his family in an attempt to lay low. He's also said that he is cooperating with the sheriff's office and that Hutchins was his friend. Baldwin also said he is in support for stricter safety regulations being implemented on future movies and TV assets. And we'll see if charges are going to be filed. I think that there could be a pretty good case for criminally negligent homicide for the individuals that were responsible, either directly or indirectly, for making sure that was a safe environment and it didn't take place. Now, if somebody put the real round in there and didn't take it out, they could be facing something a little more serious, like a reckless manslaughter type of charge. We'll see what happens. Next on the docket, the Murdoch family in South Carolina is beginning to turn on old Alex Murdoch. This guy has burned so many bridges. He is just done. Put a fork in him for sure. So first, this week, Randolph Randall Murdoch, the brother of ex-lawyer Alex Murdoch, filed suit against him to collect on loans he said he made to his brother in the last 2 months. As if that wasn't enough, John E. Parker, the president of Alex Murdoch's former law firm, which is known as PMPED, also filed suit claiming he loaned Murdoch $477,000 between March and July. Now, Randy Murdoch says he loaned his brother $75,000 on September 2nd. This was the day before the law firm, founded by Alex Murdoch's great-grandfather, forced him out over allegations of misappropriations of funds. That's a fancy way of saying theft. Now, according to the lawsuit, the loan was to cover an overdrawn bank account. Interesting, is it not? Well, then Alex Murdoch staged a backroad suicide for hire deal, was arrested for insurance fraud, and admitted to having an alleged drug problem. Now, Randy Murdoch drove his brother to a drug rehabilitation facility outside of South Carolina and loaned him another $15,000 to enroll in that facility. Now, Randy Murdoch, who is still a member of the family law firm, said he deducted $43,500 from the amount for a tractor and brush clearing equipment. John E. Parker claims that he loaned Murdoch $150,000 in March, $77,000 in May, and another $250,000 in July, after Alex's wife, Maggie, and son, Paul, were found shot to death at one of the family's home for a grand total of $477,000. Parker did not reveal what the loans were made for to Alex Murdoch. Now, during a highly anticipated court hearing on Friday, South Carolina Circuit Judge Daniel Hall heard arguments whether to freeze and recover assets of Alex Murdoch. And well, Hall announced that he'll make a decision on the Murdoch case sometime this week. Now, attorney Mark Tinsley, Joe McCulloch, and Eric Bland are all representing victims of various crimes in connection with Alex Murdoch. The attorneys filed motions last week to lock up Alex and Buster Murdoch's assets and appoint receivers to manage those assets. Tinsley, McCulloch, and Bland were all in attendance at the hearing, while Alex Murdoch's pricey defense attorneys were not there. No members of the Murdoch family appeared to be present during the court hearing. Alex Murdoch, who's still behind bars, was unable to attend. During the hearing, only one attorney appeared to be present on behalf of the Murdoch family, John Tiller, an attorney who represents the insurance company that had agreed to cover up to $500,000 for Alex and Buster Murdoch's in the Beach homicide case, arguing that Tinsley hasn't effectively proven yet that Paul Murdoch was driving the boat when Beach died. There was no one to defend Mr. Murdoch, Tinsley told the court Friday. In all due respect, Mr. Tiller is a fine lawyer and I respect him greatly, but he's been hired by one particular insurance company, and I sincerely doubt that they're going to pay to defend Mr. Murdoch for these unrelated claims the receiver can do. Now, Tinsley quoted Murdoch attorneys at least half a dozen times in reference to his claims that Alex Murdoch is destitute. He's living pretty well for somebody who has no assets, Tinsley argued. He's got a crisis manager. He's got a number of lawyers in addition to Mr. Tiller that he's paid for. In court, Tinsley said Griffin charged $7.50 an hour for his attorney's fees. Now, Eric Bland has said that the receiver will be able to find out whether or not Griffin and the other attorneys were paid any fees from funds allegedly stolen from the Satterfield settlement. And during that hearing, Tinsley asked the court to appoint two outside parties, attorney John T. Lay Jr. and former United States attorney Peter McCoy Jr., to have control over Alex and Buster Murdoch's asset, which is known as a receivership. This would give Lay and McCoy broad power, not only to lock up Alex and Buster Murdoch's assets, if any, but to sue for the recovery of those assets as well, possibly even attorney's fees. Tiller argued that if Hall freezes Murdoch's assets and appoints a receiver in this case, it sets a bad precedent for other civil cases going forward. Tinsley said that the receivership is necessary for the victims in this case to get justice. And Tinsley said that it's possible that there are more victims like the Satterfield family who were duped by Alex Murdoch and are waiting to sue him. At the end of the hearing, Tinsley drove home the point that Alex Murdoch isn't a typical criminal and that extraordinary circumstances should apply to this case. So what does that really mean? For a receiver to be appointed, and basically what's referred to as a pre-judgment attachment of assets, you have a very tough hurdle to first show that things can disappear, okay? The item is going to disappear. Planes, boats, fungible items can be seized. And you have to show that you have a very high likelihood of success for the court to seize that because there's been no judgment that's been entered just yet. So you usually try to have a trial first, but this particular case, it looks like it's going to be, close call for the judge. We'll see what he decides. I think they're going to appoint a receiver in this particular case. Now, as I said, I was down in South Carolina just yesterday, and I went down to, a nice little cigar shop down there, and I got all the rumors. Now, let's just say, because we like to stick to the facts, we're not going to talk about all the rumors, but let me tell you, there are a lot of people in South Carolina that want nothing to do with the Murdoch family, at least Alex Murdoch anymore. Apparently, though, they were rather well-respected, except everybody had the opinion, I say everybody, that's an overgeneralization, but the people said they all knew that Paul Murdoch, the son that's now deceased, apparently everybody knew that kid was trouble from day one. Just telling you what the locals are telling me, right? I know you shouldn't gossip. We don't like to speculate here. But this was a pretty good confirmed collection of the community. Let's just put it that way. And they're expecting more charges. That's down there from the local beat, so to speak. All right. More bizarre information. All right. Where could more bizarre information come from than the Lori Vallow matter? Well, authorities in Arizona released an audio of a phone call during which the ex-wife of the late Alex told a police detective that her former husband had a bizarre sexual relationship with his sister, Lori Vallow. The woman is only referred to as Debbie, and Debbie told the police that Cox would regularly talk about how his sister was hot and that the two often engaged in inappropriate sexual touching in front of family members. Now, Debbie reportedly married Alex Cox in 1992, and the couple divorced less than a year later. Now, Debbie reportedly contacted the Chandler Police Department in September of 2020, a few months after investigators found the bodies of Lori Vallow's two children buried in the backyard of her fifth husband, Chad Daybell. There was just a lot of crazy dynamics in that family back then, and it caused a lot of issues right away. It actually made me feel scared and nervous, Debbie told the detectives, noting that she hadn't met the rest of the Cox family until after they were married. Now, the detective asked, "How so?" To which Debbie said, "Because there was a lot of inappropriate sexual touching and things going on in the family, particularly between him and his sister, Lori." The detective asked what she meant by inappropriate sexual touching, to which Debbie said they would simulate sexual acts and he would pick her up and she would wrap her legs around his waist and he would kind of do a bounce her up and down on himself and then they would moan. She also said Cox and Lori's parents would constantly talk about their sex life in front of the family, saying it seemed kind of like a game for them. The strange dynamics was what led Debbie to leave Alex just months after their marriage. Now, she stated, "Alex and I only lived together for about 4 to 5 months, and then I just knew that this family was too weird, that I had made a big mistake, and so I got out." Debbie then described Alex as a really, really protective big brother who sexualized his sister quite a bit and touched her breasts and things like that. She said that when she asked Alex if there was a sexual relationship between him and his sister, he accused her of being weird and thinking that that was weird. However, Debbie said she did not think the two were sleeping together. Now, as we know, Alex Cox died in December of 2019 from a blood clot, according to the Maricopa County Medical Examiner's Office, which determined his death to have been from natural causes. Cox killed Lori's fourth husband, Charles Vallow, just months before in July of 2019, claiming self-defense. Lori has since been indicted in the alleged murder of Charles Vallow. Lori is also charged in, obviously, in Idaho for killing her two children, Tylee Ryan, JJ Vallow. And oh, that's right, she's also named as a co-conspirator as it relates to the death of Tammy Day Bell. Just can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. All right, more evidence that the world is losing its mind. Fire marshals with the New York Fire Department arrested a suspect Sunday who allegedly used improvised incendiary devices, commonly known as Molotov cocktails, that damaged a deli in Brooklyn. The fire marshals arrested 38-year-old Joel Mangle for alleged use of these devices against a deli on the North Strand Avenue in Brooklyn. The entire incident was caught on surveillance video from inside the deli. Firefighters who arrived at the deli within 3 minutes after being called Sunday at 7:53 a.m. rapidly brought the situation under control and also provided medical treatment for a person who was suffering injuries that were not life-threatening. Fortunately, no one was killed during the explosions. Magnol is charged with arson, assault, reckless endangerment, criminal possession of a weapon, and criminal mischief. The Brooklyn District Attorney's Office will obviously prosecute this case. No word as to why Mr. Mangle wanted to burn down the deli. I don't know. Maybe the sandwich, the bagel wasn't good. I don't know. More evidence. World's going crazy. A man was accused of sexually assaulting his seatmate during an October 25th flight from California to Colorado. According to the complaint filed in the United States District Court of Colorado, 26-year-old Robert Earl Glasper III was arrested after being accused of repeatedly touching a fellow passenger before exposing himself and pleasuring himself in mid-flight. The victim alleged in the statement that Glasper appeared to be under the influence when he boarded the plane. The victim and Glasper were seated next to each other in the middle seat and window seat, respectively, while a female passenger sat in the aisle seat. Before the flight began, the victim alleged in the statement that she noticed Glasper was sitting on his seatbelt. When the victim stood up to retrieve their seatbelt and allow Glasper to reach his own, Glasper allegedly grabbed the victim's buttocks and squeezed it. Glasper repeatedly put his hand on the victim's left leg and attempted to hold his hand as the flight continued. The complainant alleged that Glasper also repeatedly asked the victim to, quote, jerk him off, end quote. Glasper had gotten up from his seat. When the victim came back, the victim noticed that he had an erection. The complaint alleged that Glasper then began pleasuring himself and exposed himself to the victim. The female passenger and a witness seated across the aisle then flagged down a flight attendant to report the entire incident. When the flight landed in Denver, the complainant stated that Glasper told responding officers he was unaware of the allegations and said that his interaction was completely consensual. And then finally, that's right, pervs on the plane. How about pervs on Halloween? Convicted Utah sex offender Stephen Kelly Little was nude when he opened the door of his Provo home for trick-or-treat. Trick-or-treat! Police allege at least five children older than 14 and three under 14 saw the 48-year-old naked, and one of them shot video and gave it to the investigators. One father went back to Little's door after his daughter had told him that Little had exposed himself, and Little opened the door naked again. The father told Little to shut his lights off, stop answering the door, and call police. Police asked why he was answering the door naked, and Little said because he had just gotten out of the shower. When police asked why he was inviting children inside, Little said because that's where the candy was. Now, back in 2019, Little pleaded guilty to lewdness involving a child for an incident in a previous year when he peered through a bathroom stall of a 10-year-old boy using the bathroom at the Provo Recreational Center. Charging documents state that he was also touching himself, making sexually suggestive sounds. He was serving probation on that plea. Now, for his Halloween antics, he was charged with five counts of lewdness, three counts of lewdness involving a child. So what does that really mean? Well, it means Mr. Little will more than likely have a probation revocation complaint filed against him, and the sentence can be imposed when and if a conviction takes place in this particular case. Clearly, this guy has got a problem. Mr. Little has got a problem. What have we said before, ladies and gentlemen? Past performance is indicative of future results. Yes, we like to think that people are going to change. The reality of it is they're probably not. All right. Jury selection continues in the Kyle Rittenhouse case. Obviously, Rittenhouse is alleged to have killed two people and wounded another during unrest in Kenosha, Wisconsin last summer. Now, Rittenhouse now is 18, accused of fatally shooting Anthony Huber and Joseph Rosenbaum and wounding Gage Grosskreutz. Rittenhouse is charged with five felonies: first-degree intentional homicide, first-degree reckless homicide, attempted first-degree intentional homicide, and two counts of first-degree reckless endangerment. He is also charged with a misdemeanor of possession of a dangerous weapon under the age of 18 and a non-criminal violation of a failure to comply with an emergency order. He has pled not guilty to all charges, which is his absolute right to do so. The trial is expected to last just over 2 weeks and will be televised. After a day of unrest in Kenosha, Wisconsin, following the shooting of Jacob Blake, Rittenhouse traveled to the city from his home in Illinois. And on the night of August 25th, armed with a rifle, he clashed with people gathering near a car dealership and fatally shot Rosenbaum. This is all according to the criminal complaint. Others at the scene pursued Rittenhouse, 17 at the time, who then fatally shot Huber and wounded Grosskreutz. Prosecutors say Rittenhouse's actions constituted criminal homicide, but his attorneys say he shot the men in self-defense. Now, Wisconsin law requires when a self-defense claim is raised, prosecutors must disprove self-defense beyond a reasonable doubt. That's standard everywhere. Those chosen to sit on the jury will be tasked with assessing the reasonableness of Rittenhouse's actions on the night in question. And then we have our dumb criminal. Crime Talk's dumb criminal of the day. A video went viral this week of a woman slipping out of the back door of an Amazon delivery truck. The video clip shows a woman in a black dress and flip-flops in a Florida neighborhood hopping out of the truck. The Amazon delivery driver seems to be quite the gentleman as he holds the door open for her and gently shuts it after she's hopped out. The video certainly sparks some speculation on what the two had been doing up to the moments before the clip. The driver has since been fired from his delivery job at Amazon for not upholding the high standards they have for delivery partners and their drivers, and also for violating the no unauthorized passengers inside the vehicle policy.